arts and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or fuck with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
I don't knock it, cause I'm about that profit. TT, that's my sister. OG, that's my cousin. Just talk to my brother. Told him that I love him. Made it from the bottom. Beef, no problem. All they ever ask is when my new shit drop. TT, that's my sister. OG, that's my cousin. Just talk to my brother. Told him that I love him. Made it from the bottom. Beef, no problem. All they ever ask is when my new shit.
Good morning. It's November 15th. You're tuned into Off the Beaten Path here on 101.9 CITR. We do this every Wednesday. Thank you. We're broadcasting from the unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territory here live from the most western part of Vancouver, bringing to you a nice offering as you enter your weekend. Like I said, I'm your host, Issa Arian. And if you've never tuned into the show before, you're in for a treat. We have a lot to get through today. And if you want to know just what we do here, like what you will be spending your next hour doing, what you'll be doing is you'll be coming with me down my path. Think of this as a cultural guided tour for your eardrums as we explore many topics from local topics here in Vancouver to Canadian topics in general, then explore some global issues, a lot of news from our neighbors down south, and then just some interesting stories that I feel are particularly relevant to what you would like to hear, what I would like to talk about. Some cool things, some interesting, weird topics. Occasionally we have some guests. Next week we'll be having a friend of mine join us. I'm fortunate to have a lot of interesting friends, a lot of friends doing some cool things, a lot of really, really smart friends, and then also some really, really smart people who are not my friends do me a solid and come on the show to talk about what it is they have going on and some of the things that they care about. So we really appreciate those moments as well. And then you have me. And I love bringing you the news and really getting people prepared for the weekend and the rest of the week. I don't know. I just kind of want to put that back in the background. So, you know, here we like to start off with the weather. I feel like it's like a good way. As people prepare for the weekends and then the beginning of next week, you know, if you're too lazy to check the weather app on your phone, what you can do is you can just tune into Off the Beaten Path at around 7:05 every Thursday. In my hometown of Washington, D.C., kids got a snow day today, so just be thankful that we live here in Vancouver and not in Washington, because while snow days are great for kids, they don't really work out the same for adults. I've learned that the hard way when I was living in Cleveland. 3 feet of snow, Issa, where are you at? And I was like, I thought we had a snow day. I was going to take the day off, but no, you still have to go to work. So good on all of those people who made it in safely in D.C. and in other regions where it is also snowing. Here in Vancouver, we are fortunate because today it is only a high of 10 with a 90% chance of precipitation. So you will get wet. However, you won't be that cold, which is not that bad. Through the weekend actually looks very delightful. Seemingly the opposite of how the weather normally goes here, where the week is great, but it doesn't matter because you're at work, and by the time you get out of work, it's dark. This time, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, all the way through Tuesday, it'll be around an average of 10 degrees with a 0% chance of precipitation. Super sunny on Sunday, so if you want to get Saturday and Sunday, so if you ever want to get any of those last minute hikes in, or those last hikes for the season, those are some great opportunities to do that. And then starting on Wednesday the 21st, moving all the way to down to Wednesday the 28th, it is going to rain for a week straight. Not something that is particularly unfamiliar, but if you are American and you are looking for an alternative to Thanksgiving, you know that it is going to rain on your Thanksgiving, which is on November 22nd. And before we get into like some weather-related news and some more particularly BC-related news, Vancouver-related news, I think that as the weather changes, this is the right time to really talk about hypothermia. And what are some of the things that you can do? So there's lots of, I find this to be something that particularly I care about, because I often, probably stupidly, but you know, it makes me feel comfortable, I often hike alone. And sometimes, you know, when you're hiking, I think we talked about this a few weeks ago, you have to make like quick decisions on whether you're going to turn around or stay put, you know, if you have the proper gear. And one of those risks is being cold and hypothermia. So if you have signs of hypothermia, which is being cold, shivering, loss of motor skills, slurred speech, or a slow pulse or shallow breathing, tell you you're kind of already too far. What you should have done is you should have started with prevention. Like, hey, don't get hypothermia by keeping yourselves out of situations that will get you hypothermia. However, there are a few things that you can do. You can call the police. Call the paramedics. There's really no tips for avoiding hypothermia because once it happens, you're pretty effed. Moving on. Before we actually get started, starting today throughout the weekend is the East Side Culture Crawl, and there's a ton of events that are going on. I recently wrote an article for the Discord magazine featuring a woman named Caitlin French, who is a local dyer here. She dyes and knits and creates her own knitting patterns, and she will have her studio on display and her works. If you like watercolor painting, she makes natural watercolor paintings. Like, she's out in the bush finding and foraging elements so that she can create the perfect watercolors. And so you should check her stuff out. But also, there's a ton of events, spaces, places, and traces, cultural calls. So that'll be there's 70 participants, 70 artists who are participating. But there's just so many things to do this weekend. Just go on culturecall.ca and you'll be able to see everything that's going on. It's really one of the bright, I would say one of the bright spots, one of the bright things about this city. Not only do we have like beautiful nature and you know, just like pristine, untouched, feels like forests and things like that, but we also have particularly on the East Side just a very strong arts community where people are collaborating and building great things. So if you want to check those out, it starts today through Sunday, so check it out. As we begin to talk about some more things that are going on here, surprise, surprise, police see no spike in pot impaired driving after legalization. And I think that is pretty obvious because people were already driving high. Like, we talk about how not much has changed here in British Columbia, but the real thing is that not much has changed. Like, why would you? I personally don't really understand why the police even would have predicted a spike in pot-related accidents or pot-related driving impairment or whatever that they'd like to call it. Because they already knew that people were driving high. I don't understand. Like, here in BC, particularly where marijuana was so easy to get, I do know a few individuals who felt that now that you can buy it from the government, they just wanted to do it just to do it. Like, and I've never really understood the propensity to just give the government money just because I can. However, you know, to each their own. And I'm sure there's people who, you know, maybe are dabbling post-legalization. But for the most part, people are just doing their thing, especially people who are driving and smoking weed. Like, I feel like if you're driving and smoking weed in 2018, this is probably just something that you've been doing for a while. So I kind of just trust, you know, that you know what you're doing. I don't really think it's the same as drinking alcohol. and driving. But then again, I'm sure for some people that it is. Anyways, so they haven't seen any a spike in issues. However, we talked about this last week where they are still giving out tickets. So just because the police don't see anything wrong doesn't mean that they don't have a reason to give out tickets. And we're going to be talking about that a little later as we bring up some issues that are a little closer to home. You know, here in British Columbia, we talk about issues that are pretty much related to housing, homelessness, and drug use. And so today, a statistic came out that there are over 10 overdoses a day in Canada, 10 drug overdoses a day in Canada. And so when you think about that, that's, you know, like 35,000 people a year. I mean, 3,500 people a year at least, who are driving, who are dying from drug overdoses, seemingly preventable. And there's really seems to be no solution. There isn't a specific concentration of where these people are dying at, but we know here locally in BC, particularly in the downtown core. That is a huge issue, overdoses, and the idea that people are not getting help that they need in time enough to save their life. So it's just something to note that just because there hasn't been any direct news towards it, that this is not something that is continuing to be an issue. And so if you have, you know, in your empathy set to do something about that, I urge everybody to do just a little bit of community service. Like, I personally am not perfect, but I feel that there's nothing that you can give more that's more valuable than your time to your community. When we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about how Vancouver is trying to change the density of their housing, making it a little bit more affordable, and Vancouver Black Lives Matter. Be back after this musical break.
Up on my DMs. Already know it's what you wanna do. Baby, no, I ain't got nothing to prove. Say you got me losing, I'm losing my cool. When I know what I should and I shouldn't do, yeah. Oh my body. Losing.
You're now back with Off the Beaten Path here on 101.9 CITR's radio station. If you'd like to call in, the number is 604-822-2487, 604-UBC-CITR. And one of the things is that people here in Vancouver, so we understand that there's not enough housing. So we like to talk about homelessness, housing, and drug use. But housing is a constant issue for everyone, even especially for the homeless. And the Vancouver Council approves a citywide plan to vote on the duplex, because one of the things is that the people who do live here, the people who do own properties here, they have maintained this very, I guess, like hard and fast grip on what housing should look like here in Vancouver. And duplexes would potentially alleviate some of those issues, because when you can build a house on top of a house, you can fit like two people and, two families in the same size that you could fit one. And just by pure mathematics, would increase the amount of available places to live, which would hopefully decrease the price of rent. And maybe if you are wealthy enough here in Vancouver, you could even buy a house. And so what we see is that if you look at cbc.com, cbc.ca, you can see a map of what the proposed plan be and some of the options for these duplexes. I mean, I personally would just wait and see, but it looks as if the people are continuing to consider alternatives to what is going on right now. And I think that it hits people when they realize that their kids can't afford to live here. So, where people move here to specifically try to like build a life, and it's hard because you can continually get rent evicted and moved and all types of other things. So, just yesterday, a Toronto anti-carding activist by the name of Desmond Cole was walking in Stanley Park, or near Stanley Park, and was pulled over by the police and carded. So if you don't know what carded is, being carded is when basically the police just stop you for no reason and ask to see your identification for like no reason at all. It is pretty illegal, but I mean, who's going to tell the police that? And they can do it. They can do it anyways. Like, I think this is something that I have a particular familiarity with, because it has happened to me so many times that I just refuse to give my ID, and I'm like, well, you know what police hate more than just being harassers is they hate paperwork. So, I just try to make them do as much paperwork as possible, because, if you're going to inconvenience my life, I'm going to try to do the same to you. So this is a big issue in a lot of places. And it seems that the police here carded the wrong person. By carded the wrong person, I mean, it was brought to the attention here about a few months ago, where there was a study about racial profiling from police in Western Canada. And so what it came down to was, I mean, I feel like the results are fairly obvious. You probably could guess them before I say them, is that First Nations and black people here are carded and just have like police engagements that are way higher than the proportion of the population. So with like a population of like 1% black here in Vancouver, black people are like 5% of the cards, which to me doesn't make any sense. So I admittedly opened this story with some skepticism, because it's really one thing I learned about having a level of privilege is that it's sometimes really hard to not say, well, that doesn't happen to me. That doesn't happen to me. So you begin to like question it, because you're like, that doesn't happen to me. Like, how am I supposed to know? How am I supposed to know if that's actually what happens? Or you start to think like, well, what actually did you do? You know, well, did it really go like that? And you start to, cast doubt. But for myself, I never want to be on the side of the police, because they are the police. I don't feel like that's self-explanatory. Like, if they have enough people on their side, you got to be on the side of the people. Not blindly on the side of the people all the time. I feel like you can pick no side, which is what I'm going to do. Because I feel that for two reasons. Like, I feel like, you know, you particularly in this, it's like, I don't really, you never really know. Particularly, and when you think about all of the crazy things that go on in downtown Vancouver, not necessarily in Cole Harbour, but in downtown, the police stopping somebody for smoking a cigarette in the park, which is something that I have actually told people is way more offensive to people here than one might think. You would think that the people who are offended by that are just regular people who are maybe walking their dogs or having those dogs in those damn strollers. I feel like those are the type of people who might call the police on you for smoking a cigarette in a park or walking down the sidewalk. But this happens to have had a police officer pull them over for offending a city bylaw. They decided to give no ticket, but when reading the statement given by the police do say that Cole was stopped for a bylaw infraction, not a street check, and they said his information wasn't recorded. Now, it's like, that's when that, for me, reading the whole entire story, because I saw this on Twitter first and I saw his video, and I am admittedly a little, I don't want to say distrustful of activists. Like, I feel that there has been a, like, not, I don't know this person, this individual. I don't know him personally. I don't know anything, but I feel like there is a profession that has been created by being an activist, and I just really don't understand some of the positions that some people take. And so that is, that causes me to be like skeptical, which I personally, I feel, I feel bad for feeling that way, because I know that there's so many legitimate issues, and there's so many people who are talking about these things all of the time. Like, this guy talks about street checks in Toronto, and I know that that's an issue. That's a real thing, like, where people are harassed. Like, we talk about this in New York, and where I'm from in D.C., where the police would just bother you. Like, and the police have just been, I mean, by bother you, bother me as a black person, and the police have been doing that probably since I was 12 years old. And I was just telling a story yesterday when I was 12 years old, I was only like 100 pounds. So it's not, you know, it doesn't have much to do with size, no matter how many times that they put that into a police report or they put that into a news story about how, you know, some black kid was 6 foot or 6'5" or, you know, 160 pounds. Or I remember when they when Trayvon Martin was shot by George Zimmerman, they just talked about how like big of a person he was, but he was also only 15 years old. So they put in these arbitrary, you know, age, height, and weight as if it matters, because the police can harass you at any age and whatever height and however much you weigh. And so that caused me to be skeptical. So I'm like, well, the police, well, of course they're not going to say there was a street check. Of course they're going to say it was a bylaw violation. And it's just interesting that these types of things do still happen here whenever we like to think that, like, Vancouver is like a post, like a post-racial utopia. It feels that way sometimes. Like, it feels like you're walking in a bubble, but then you get reminded that maybe while living in this bubble, there's some things that you just miss. And I also think that it doesn't help that there's really no central space to talk about these things here in Vancouver. So I had to actually ask my friends, like, is this something that happens to you all? Because it's so hard for me to believe, because I felt like I don't experience that. But just because I don't experience that doesn't mean it doesn't happen. So I think that it's great that I don't want to say it's great that it happened to this person, but it is good that it happened to someone who's willing and able to have a platform to speak up about these things. You know, police officers just arbitrarily stopping people for bylaw violations and, you know, asking for information, and that is not necessary. I mean, they could have easily asked them to put out the cigarette if that's what it was about. And I guess that we'll continue to find out, like, you know, more information. But also it leads into like a conversation that I'm probably not going to have on air. But if you know me, like, there's something that I would like to talk about, because I don't know, I'm just a natural skeptic. And sometimes it's not good. But when we come back, we are going to talk a little bit about the wildfires in California, and how we seem to not be able to escape Mother Nature anymore. When we come back. Back at Off the Beam Path, 101.9 CITR. And so, if you haven't heard, this is the deadliest wildfire ever in American history. Over 56 people have died. already, and there's over 130 people missing and unaccounted for currently. And what we are seeing is that these wildfires are like ripping through Southern California, and there's also smaller fires in Northern California. It just seems that California is on fire, which is scary. I was talking about this with a coworker yesterday, just about how you never really, like, you think that we would have come up with a way, you know, to stop wildfires, but it, but we don't. It's just like we are at the mercy. And I think about Captain Planet, you know, fire, water, wind, earth, heart, you know, and those elements, and such good propaganda, you know, for to get me and kids like me to care for the environment. But also just the idea that we are reminded that we are at the mercy of Mother Nature. And when you see like the president blame the California Wildlife Association or, you know, policy and things like that, it's like, hey, actually, no. It's like, actually, no. There isn't. It has nothing to do with policy. It has everything to do with the fact that it's fire and you can't really stop it. And it doesn't seem like there's any stop to it currently. I mean, it's burned down so many houses, and like I said, it's killed over 50 people. You know, even celebrities' houses, and I can only imagine, like, this. I mean, I don't have really had that much stuff. If somebody was like, hey, EC, you need to evacuate your house in 5 minutes, like, what are the things I'm going to grab? I'm just going to grab my computer so that I can potentially try to buy some renter's insurance, you know, before my Wi-Fi cuts out. But other than that, I feel like there's not that many things I would need to grab. Probably nothing, not more than I could, nothing in my house is that I, more valuable. I couldn't fit it into like a few bags, but just can imagine having one of those big mansions, having one of those big gluttonous mansions, you know, with all of those precious furs and things like that, that are just gone now. And it's probably some type of punishment for being gluttonous and just having too many things, but that doesn't stop from the destruction that the fire has. And so there's so many places to donate. There's so many people doing some amazing things. Like when you see stories about people driving into the flames and trying to pull, you know, out elderly people, or nurses and doctors going in there and trying to go into hospitals and saving people. And I saw a story about this man saving someone on a helipad, you know, driving around in his Toyota Tacoma. And I don't know if many of you know, but like, I am a marketer in my like daily life. And so when I see things like that, particularly, I think Toyota said that they were going to get him a new truck, you know, for the work that he did. And there is, and for me, like I said, I'm a cynic, and like a cynic capitalist. And so I'm like, that there's no better marketing for Toyota than that man gave them. Like, a free truck is so little. Just understanding how much these companies pay for like research, and how much they pay for execution, for what are the things that they're trying to accomplish and the type of image that they're trying to give off. So, you know, what happened with Toyota was so organic and so invaluable that a $30,000 truck is absolutely nothing. And what they should be doing is they should be giving trucks to everybody who's helping. I don't want to say maybe what they should do, but what they could do. It's just amazing. Some of the things that people are, you know, people are putting them, themselves through so that they can help their fellow man. And then we've talked about this last year and the year before, and nothing has changed, as even as there have been numerous, and I mean dozens and dozens of articles about it, about California using prisoners to fight wildfires. So California pays inmates $2 an hour while they're in fire camp, and then they pay them $3 an hour while they're actively fighting a fire. And so basically California uses over 2,000 inmates to fight fires. And so we're talking about this with some friends yesterday, just about how our prison system is particularly well suited to parallel like our slavery system, where people are doing work that is dangerous and would put them in a position to make, you know, some money, you know, had they not been in prison. But, you know, they being incarcerated means that they don't deserve anything, and they should risk their lives for everybody. The program dates back to 1915, where prison labor was used to build highways and roads and railroads and factories, and then it was expanded so that it would include fire and some other dangerous things that other people don't want to do. And I continue to just think that how wrong that is, because not only is it wrong to feel like to put these people's lives at risk, you know, fighting fires when you just because you want to save money. I think that it said in 2017 that this program has saved the state of California over $100 million. But also the idea that when these people come out of jail, they can't become firefighters. And so they say that they want to make sure that these prisoners are making a volunteer choice that's free and uncoerced. But when you are in jail, is anything really free and uncoerced? I'm not sure. When we get back, there are some interesting and funny stories I would like to share. Stay tuned. You're back at Off the Beaten Path here on 101.9 CITR. If you like listening to the show, you can find old episodes on CITR.ca/Off the Beaten Path. You can find them on Mixcloud.com/Off the Beaten Path. You can also go to Facebook.com/OTBP20XX. Also, if you like the music and you like me, then you'll probably like my friends. So you tune in on Tuesday from 8 to 10. It's Crimes and Treasons every Tuesday. That's Relly Rels, Homeboy Jules, Jamal Steels, Malik, me, and Horsepower, who is still in the States doing her thing. Her last episode of The Curry Shop, which is a show on First We Feast, which is on Complex.com. You should check it out and give her all of the love. She's doing a great job, and we are so proud of her. So some of the things that are going on. So we talked about Canada, United States, Mexico having a bid for the World Cup, and Vancouver pretty much opting out of that agreement. Well, Calgary is the next. Calgary is the next Canadian city to opt out. Basically, Calgarians have voted against a bid to host the 2026 Olympic Winter Olympics, and is 56%, which is pretty overwhelming when it comes to these votes. Basically, people are just not really here for that. People are just not really here for public money going towards building stadiums for the Olympics. And I totally understand it. But I was kind of hoping that Calgary would host the Winter Olympics just so that we could get a repeat of Cool Runnings, maybe Cool Runnings 2. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the movie Cool Runnings, but it's basically, its plot consists of a Jamaican bobsled team who are sprinters who, through a tragic event, are forced to try something new. And so what they want to do is have a bobsled team. But unfortunately, there is no snow in Jamaica. So they improvise. If you've never seen Cool Runnings, you should 100% look it up. I imagine that 100% of the people who listen to this radio show have seen Cool Runnings. And if you have not, call yourself a snow day today and check it out. In better news, I guess it doesn't pertain to here in Canada, but Chick-fil-A is now delivering, and they are going to start with a free sandwich. Now, I feel like Chick-fil-A is one of those things where it's like, I know the person who owns Chick-fil-A doesn't want my money. Not only do they not want my money, they probably wouldn't eat Chick-fil-A at the same table with me. But the chicken is so damn good. I don't understand. Like, I feel like this is like when we're talking about capitalism and making sacrifices and all of those things. Like, I feel like that Russell Westbrook meme where you're just trying to sneak a snack and you're like, you know, I want to start the revolution, but I also want Chick-fil-A. I don't know. It's hard. So Chick-fil-A, I wonder will they deliver on Sundays, because you know, Chick-fil-A is not open on Sundays because they want their employees to be with their families. There's nothing really to say. Like, I kind of hate giving Chick-fil-A more business, but then, like, I kind of want to just, like, enjoy it by myself. But just because of the feelings that I have towards that homophobic, racist owner. Like the owner of Chick-fil-A is homophobic and racist and makes great chicken, and I have a really hard time reconciling that. And like, I'm not perfect, you know. I got my flaws, and you know, that is definitely one of my flaws, is that to follow through on the Chick-fil-A boycott is just hard to do. In other news, so I don't know if you have heard about, if you don't know if you've heard about this security guard whose name is Jamel Roberson, and he worked at a bar outside in the suburb of Chicago, and he was dead Sunday morning. And so he wasn't just found dead. He was murdered by the police officers who showed up after Jamel had asked several drunk patrons to leave Manny's Blue Room Bar. And right after leaving, the group returned and someone opened fire in the bar. So him being the armed, well-trained security guard that he is, the 26-year-old guard returned fire and apprehended one of the men in the group before local police arrived on the scene. When the police got there, Roberson, who's wearing a security guard hat that he must have stolen, and the security guard's uniform that he probably put on right before the police came, while he was holding down the suspect and other bar patrons and staff and security guards are telling them that Jamel is a security guard, they shot him 4 times. And he died. It is just another one of those instances where they talk about, one, the president of the United States hasn't said shit about it. And two, it's one of the instances where they say, well, you know, what can stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. So there's a good guy with a gun. He stops him. And then you know who stops the good guy with the gun? The police. And just like another, line showing that guns are not good. Like, whether they're held by a good person or a bad person or a person in general, like, there's no such thing. And now, because of that, not only is this individual dead, but, like, it leaves, his family, his kids, his mom, his aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters, you know, everybody's grieving for this individual who, I don't know Jamel. I didn't know Jamel, but he was just doing his job. And so, like, as someone who also works in a bar, I definitely sympathize with the idea that you just doing your job, and not only doing your job, but doing your job so well that somebody opened fire in a bar and you stopped them without anybody else getting hurt. This individual who's good at his job, who's armed, able to make these decisions better than the police officers can make them. Because we see these instances all the time where the police are in these high-pressure situations where someone's shooting, you know, and they end up shooting each other. This guy didn't shoot any patrons, just apprehended the person and was killed for it. Yeah, they have a GoFundMe, which I feel like the police should probably just pay for, and basically to help his mom and funeral costs, which is just sad. In other news, a Texas University professor called the police on a black woman while she had her feet up on a lecture hall. And so a guy in the class posted a video, which is now viral, of the student page. And I mean, they talk about the student's name. I don't know why they don't put the profession name there. As you can see, she had her feet up on the table, and the police, the professor called the police on her for being uncivil. Now, what you don't see in the video is any uncivil behavior. Anita Moss is the professor. And so the idea is that, like, I feel that when we think about all of these instances where people call the police on black people, I feel like that is an action worthy of an assault charge, if there's nothing. Because when somebody calls the police on me, I don't think that they care exactly what happens to me after that. Like, they feel like they have washed their hands of it, when in reality, we have seen it to be very dangerous. And the consequences can be either aligned with exactly what this person wants to happen, or way more than what should be expected. It could be assault, I believe. And so in the last story, a Japanese man claims he's married to a hologram. So this past month, 35-year-old Akikio Kondo settled down and married an animated 16-year-old virtual reality singer named Hatsune Miku in Japan. The ceremony cost almost $20,000. And this is part of a question that I had with a friend earlier this week, which was if her husband had an affair with a robot. Like, when I don't mean like an affair, like, I don't mean like having sex with like one of those sex robots, but like continually over time, like having sex with the same robot, you know, maybe texting the AI, you know, the chat, or, you know, have it developing this, you know, just emotional bond to it. Like, is that cheating? And is it about the robot? Like, what is that? And I feel like these are questions that we're going to have to answer, particularly when a man can marry one, and not only just marry a hologram, but he married like a 16-year-old hologram, you know, pops. I don't know. It seems weird. Like, a 35-year-old man marrying a 16-year-old anything is weird. And so he says he's never cheated on her, and he's always been in love with Miku-san. And he's been thinking about her every day. Now, with that, I will leave you. I hope you guys have a great week. And we do this every Thursday, 7 to 8. Thanks for tuning in for the last hour. You guys have a great weekend, and enjoy your Saturday, because it will be beautiful outside. Hit the culture call and bring some money so you can support all of the local artists here in Vancouver, because they work really fucking hard. I'm out.
Broadcasts all this from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam people?
Find out for yourself Monday mornings at 11, or find episodes online at citr.ca.
Today we're joined in the studio by the Cedar